All right, let's finish up neoplasia. So neoplasia is new growth. If you stimulate the cells to become uncoordinated, if you take away the stimulus, it still persists. So this is purely a genetic disease. So one of the things that you have to recognize, a benign tumor versus malignant. Benign tumor never metastasize or will invade, versus malignant, the opposite. So let's look at characteristics of both benign and malignant. So grossly, when you have a benign tumor, you can use this, for example, the moles on your skin are benign tumors. They're going to be basically expansile, they'll grow, and they will, especially in internal organs, will compress the tissue around it. And if it compresses the certain tissue, it could cause necrosis or fibrosis in that tissue. It becomes encapsulated because it's slow growing. Macrophages will interact with that and fibroblasts, producing a fibrous capsule around it. It's similar to when you put a breast implant, where you put that foreign material there. In this case, you get fibroblast activity and you'll encase it. So it's similar to that. Then the tumor will be well differentiated based if it's a fat derived, cartilage, bone, muscle, glandular epithelium, and it's slow growing. So very few number of cells are in the mitotic phase. Non-invasive, never metastasized, even on exams. That defines benign. So here's the common example. What do you get to look forward to at your 50th birthday? Colonoscopy. That'll be your birthday present to yourself. And so one of the things you see here is an adenomatous polyp. And you can see it's got a stalk and it's well circumscribed, growing into the lumen of the proximal portion of the descending colon. So here you see the appendix. Here's the cecum. Ascending colon going around here, transverse colon going right here, and then this is the splenic flexure on the left side. Whoops. And then you can see it going down, descending. There's your sigmoid, and what's that right there? Your rectum, a pouch to collect the stool, and you get enough volume in there, defecation takes place. And that's how it goes through. And here you can see that adenomatous polyp. What does it look live when you do endoscopy? It looks like this. After a bowel prep, you get to clean out the bowel, otherwise you won't be able to see this. And here you can see this stalk, and you see this well-circumscribed glandular tumor. And it's benign. What's the biggest thing we have to worry about? Most benign tumors don't become malignant or acquire genetic changes, but this one can, is an exception to it, because you worry about colon cancer, where it become invasive. And so the bigger the polyp gets, the greater number of cells that are dividing, more mutations, and then increases the risk for a adenocarcinoma, since it's gland forming. Microscopically, the architecture of benign tumor is going to be well encapsulated, expansile. These are general rules. There's always exceptions to this. No signs of invasion microscopically. Cytologically, when you look at the individual cells, they look very close to where they came from. But there's more of them. And in terms of their genotype or their karyotype, they're diploid. And I'm going to show you the karyotype of a malignant tumor. And you'll see the compare and contrast. So it's going to be, if you did a karyotype, you're looking at your 23 pairs of chromosomes, you can look at it and say nothing looks out of the unusual. But there are mutational changes in specific genes, but not enough to cause chromosomal aberrations that you could actually see. We're going to compare this to malignant. Okay? So here you see microscopically. You can tell this is the colon right here because you can see the colonic epithelium. It's a simple columnar epithelium. It's on a one cell layer thick, making mucus. And it goes up the stalk. It's called pedunculated. And then you see these lumens. At low power, the lumens represent gland formation. That's why it's an adenoma. And you can see it's well circumscribed. We see all these glands, and we see no glands going down into the stalk or invading. The I word, that's what we're looking for, invasion. So it does not invade. Then you look at it microscopically, and here you can see the normal goblet cells where the nuclei are basically placed, because when you have a secretory cell like mucus being produced, what does it displace? The secretory product is at the apex of the cell and pushes the nucleus to the basal layer. The basal surface of the cell that's on the base membrane. And now if you look, that's normal. Here you see the gland-forming portion of that adenoma, and you can see the nuclei where basically placed. They have polarity, and you can see that they're making some mucin. But you see more nuclei compared to the density of nuclei over here. So this would be all consistent with a adenomatous polyp. What's the most common symptom? Asymptomatic. That's why you do colonoscopy. What would be the symptoms that you could get possibly? It tells you if you basically constantly hitting the polyp with fecal stream, then what happens is you could have iron deficiency anemia, or you see blood in your stool. That'd be an example. The most common cause of blood in your stool would be hemorrhoids. You're streaking blood, or if you have diverticulitis actually, where you have inflammation of outpouchings along the sigmoid colon typically. Or another is anal fissures, where you can then cause blood streaking the stools. And so there are a variety of other causes that are non-neoplastic that can put blood in your stool. Does it normally have blood in your stool? No. So now it has to be worked up. One of the causes could be this. Another symptom the patient could have is that it could, because it's just soft tissue and you hit that adenomatous polyp and it rotates on this vascular pedicle because there's blood vessels going up the stalk, they cut off the blood supply, then the polyp could infarct and you have acute abdominal pain. Could be a way it presents. But most of the time, for most people, asymptomatic. That's what you get to look forward to when you're 50 years old. Let's go to malignancy. So it's infiltrative, a sign of invasion. Because the tumor cells are highly metabolic and a lot of them are dividing, they're going to consume nutrients, and if they don't have appropriate blood supply and nutrients, they will die and become necrotic, typically in the center. One of the warning signs of in any organ system when you have a destructive process like neoplasia, you get bleeding. So if a woman had breast cancer, one of the warning signs is a bloody discharge from the nipple, for example, destructive. If you have blood in the urine, besides having cystitis or some type of kidney problem, you could also have bladder cancer or you could have kidney cancer. Can give you warning sign is bleeding. GI tract, anywhere along the GI tract you have a malignancy invading and destroying tissue, blood in the stool. Or if you have lung cancer, you're coughing up blood, hemoptysis. So bleeding, a bleeding mole, for example, that's not a good sign, assuming you're not picking at it. Tells you it's the invasive process. It's a warning sign that has to be looked at because it's telling you that whatever the disease process is, it's destructive to the tissue. And so you're going to get bleeding. So that's an important warning sign. Another sign that one looks at is that basically you have rapid growth because a greater proportion of cells in a malignant tumor are doing what at any one time? In mitosis, dividing. And that's why they can grow. What's the fastest? There's tumors that can double in size in 24 hours, for example. So it's telling you 99% of the cells are doing what? Dividing, mitosis. So the greater a fraction of cells that are malignant are in the cell cycle dividing than the size of the tumor. What happens is that because these are going to be very abnormal cells, their cell cycle time actually is longer than normal human cell time. Most cells in the body replicate that are replicating, either stable or labile cells, are between 12 to 16 hours is the total cell cycle time. When you have malignancies, because you have so much chromatin and they're mutated cells, their cell cycle time could be either prolonged. And so they develop lethal mutations, they could die, and so it depends on all these factors, how fast the tumor grows, and whether they're dependent upon vessels or not, because they need oxygen and nutrients. So what's the characteristic that we're always looking for that tells it's malignant? Does it invade, infiltrate it? And it goes to a distant site from the point of origin, metastasis. So now we're going back to the colon. Here we see a mass, and this is contrast material that's gone. Here's the rectum, here's the anus down here, and there's sigmoid colon. And you come up here, it's going to the descending colon, now we're going transverse colon. Now we hit a stricture. And you'll notice it has a very irregular border where that contrast material is trying to get through there, this narrow opening. Now when you look at it live in a patient, what do you see? What's all this red stuff? Blood. That's a sign of invasion and becoming necrotic. And so you can see this is a destructive process that's going on because of the invasive nature as well as the tumor not getting enough blood supply. And you can see this irregular mass. Now when you look at it, open it up, Here you can see that here's this tumor that's invaded. Here's the normal wall to the right and left here. But you see this mass, and you see this narrowing right here. So if this was on the left side, what would the patient complain about? Thin caliber stools. It's like toothpaste. When you, you know, thin, it goes to that narrow opening. So when you have this narrowing, you ask the patient, if it's the left side, is it thin caliber stools or pencil stools? And that shows you there's some type of stricture that's taking place. There are other things like chronic diverticulitis, where you have scarring that can cause narrowing and mimic. So the only way you make the diagnosis is biopsy to find out whether you have a malignancy that is really occurring in this place. So here we can see that they're basically, there's invasion of the wall and causing a narrowing. So microscopic features, the architecture, infiltrative, invasion, necrosis, destruction. Now, am I going to give you a picture and then I got to ask you to decide whether it's benign or malignant? No, I'll give you enough information for you to determine its characteristics, or characteristic that would be consistent with either a benign or malignant tumor. Does it matter which tumor I pick? No. Yes.
What's the difference between infiltrative and invasive?
It's the same. It's synonymous. Synonym. Okay? Cytologically, remember, what was for benign? Cytologically, they would do what? What did it say? What was the cytology of benign tumor? We just had a few slides ago. They resemble the normal cells. Now, let's compare that to malignant tumor cells. Look at the list now. Now you notice they lose adhesion molecules, so they're discohesive. They're going to be going through different genetic changes, and they're going to look different. Pleomorphism. Pleo means what? Many morphologies. They're going to be anaplasia, plasia meaning growth, that they can look so undifferentiated you can't tell the cell of origin. You can't even tell what they resemble anymore. So when you hear the diagnosis of anaplastic carcinoma, anaplastic sarcoma, that usually has a poor prognosis because these are so undifferentiated you can't even tell what the cell of origin is. And so this is an example of how ugly these cells look like. And I'll show you examples of this in a minute. Loss of polarity, especially when you have epithelium. We're going to look at colon cancer. And the nuclei are all over the place. There can be apical, in the middle, basically, it doesn't matter. Because there's more aneuploidy going on in terms of more chromatin accumulating, the nuclei become bigger and they're open up for transcription. So the nucleus to cytoplasm ratio is greater because of this. Then you have more chromatin on hematoxin, hyperchromasia. Because you're making a lot of protein from transcription, you need RNA, so you need a prominent nucleolus. Then the tumor cells, because they have problems mitosis, can become quite large. And then you have normal to abnormal mitosis. You may have three mitotic figures in the same mitotic, or poles, four, five, and so they're abnormal. So you can see this is quite in contrast to benign tumor, where the cells what? Resemble the normal. Okay? Do you have to memorize the entire list? No. I'll give you enough characteristics that you think of that will tell you. If it's benign, it's got to look what? Normal. If I go into any of these characteristics, it is malignant. If I use any of those characteristics here, that's a sign of malignancy. Let's take a look at this. Here's at low power. Here's the colon. Here's the lumen out here. Here's the epithelium. You see it's nice and uniform in thickness. Here's the submucosa below the mucosa where the epithelium is. This is the muscle wall of your intestine. And you notice when you come here, what do you see? You see a big mass. And what is that mass doing to that wall? Invading, or what's another word for invasion? Infiltrating. Very good. There it is. Same difference. That's a sign of benign or malignancy? Malignancy. The I word, invasion. That's how you define that. That's at low power. Now you come here at higher magnification, here are the normal glands, and then you see these glands in a place they should not be, in the submucosa. That's a sign of invasion. They're trying to form lumens, so this is invasive adenocarcinoma of the colon. Very common. Now, this is not to get... When you look at this, here you see the normal cells here, because we have a small... Here's the nucleus, all this mucus, a lot of cytoplasm, and it's one cell layer thick. But when you go right to this tissue, this gland is forming a lumen. We see necrotic cells. But what do you notice about the number of cell layers here? Is it more than one or less than one? More. So they're heaped up compared to the normal. What do you notice? You see here is a mitotic figure. You don't see the perinuclear membrane compared around to this cell. So this is mitotic figure. They can develop lethal mutations and produce apoptosis. Here you see, do they all look uniformly the same looking cell, or do they look different sizes and shapes? So what do we call that, different sizes and shapes? Pleomorphism. Very good. What does morpho mean? Structure. Morphism. Morphic. Morphology means structure. So this tells you there's many different structural changes, and so this is consistent with a malignant adenocarcinoma. Another important thing, that 90% of all malignant tumors are epithelial, and so we have to talk about a concept where before you get invasion, that epithelial malignancy has to have enzymes to break down the base membrane to invade into the tissue. Before it does that, it's called carcinoma in situ. When it goes through the base membrane, now we call it what? Infiltrative invasive cancer. Which one do you think is curable? Carcinoma in situ, because there's no invasion. That's right. And that's the key concept. Now, does the patient feel in any carcinoma that they have microinvasion? No. So that's why, for example, a Pap test, when you think of cervical cancer, this is trying to pick up the lesions at carcinoma in situ or even before, so you can remove the carcinoma in situ if it's there and it's curable. So this has become very important. So what does it look like morphologically? Here is a squamous cell carcinoma. You see high NC ratio, that's carcinoma in situ. Here's the base of membrane, and you see no invasion. It's pretty uniform at its edge. But the next slide shows you this microinvasion. Here is the cancer here, that's carcinoma. But then you see a tons of tumor, 1 and 2, infiltrating through the base membrane, and that is microinvasion of a carcinoma. So this is the progression. Then once it invades, it can do what? It can metastasize to a different site, which I'll show you in a moment. Okay? So those are the microinvasion that one sees. Metastasis. This is a sign of what? Benign or malignant tumors? Malignant. Okay? So it's defined as the following. It's a process where the malignant cells are now at the site of origin, which they are growing, are going to get into vascular channels or body cavities. The classic route that most cancers travel by is lymphatics, because they're thin wall, easy to invade into. The second most common vascular structure is a little thicker than lymphatics, are veins. And then they'll use the venous system to go to the lungs as well as lymphatics. Or they can invade through the wall like colon cancer and get into the peritoneal cavity and spread throughout, implanting on the surface of the visceral organs. This occurs in the lung as well. So the most common way is lymphatics. What are classic examples of this? Malignant melanoma in the skin, breast cancer, colon cancer, stomach cancer. Those are classic lymphangitic spread. Then hematogenous spread is like liver cancer. It can invade into the hepatic veins. They drain into the inferior vena cava. Now they can get its hematogenous spread. Kidney cancer can go through the renal vein and hematogenous spread. These are classic examples of that. Another is seed body cavities. What a classic example of this. You think of organs that have access to the peritoneal cavity, you think of ovarian cancer. This is classically how it spreads, body cavities. Gallbladder, it sits underneath your liver. If it invades, it has two choices, invade into the liver or spread to the peritoneal cavity. Pancreatic cancer is well known to spread into the peritoneal cavity. Lung cancer can spread into the peritoneal cavity. So these are another way that tumors can spread. This is the illustrate on the surface of the lung. Remember when we did the lab last week? Remember I showing you the black pigment going, the macrophages? Well, if you look carefully here, you can see the same thing in this illustration. Here's the black pigment of those lymphatics. But what do you see here? You see these white lymphatics? Those are filled with cancer. This is lung cancer using the lymphatics of the lung to spread. So this is lymphangitic spread within the lung from lung cancer. This happens to be squamous cell carcinoma. So that's what, if you could visualize lymphatics, that's if it's clogged with cancer. So once it drains through the lymphatics, then it can become hematogenous and spread anywhere. This is an example of hematogenous. This person, this is a liver, and you see cirrhosis, regenerating nodules, and then you see the liver cancer arise here, and then you look at this sort of cylindrical shape structure is the liver cancer invading the hepatic vein. So if it invades the hepatic vein and drains to the inferior vena cava, what organ would it metastasize to? What organ would it metastasize to? Well, it's going to go through the heart because the heart goes in and out. It's not going to allow the tumor cells. It's going to where? The lungs. The most common tumor found in the lungs is what? Metastasis. If you're spreading by lymphatics, how does lymphatics get into the venous system? And where the venous goes to what? The lungs. When you have, what's that? Because it doesn't stay in the heart very long. Because remember, it's going through the right atrium, through the right ventricle, and what do you hit first? The lungs, that's it. It doesn't get to the heart. It's rare to see metastasis in the heart. Heart is not a good soil for metastasis. But the first organ it gets to, breast cancer. Where it can go? Lungs, lymphatics. Yes. No, because it's so highly vascularized, it gets stuck in the capillaries, the tumor cells start growing. Say, this is a place where I want to live. The lung is very hospitable. Okay. Now, this is a person, is that a normal chest x-ray? This is a patient who smoked, and you notice the left chest cavity is completely whited out. And you can see that this is the carina right here, and the trachea is shifted to the right. The heart is pushed to the right, compressing the right lung. You see how narrow the right pleural cavity is. This patient died in an autopsy. This is what his lungs look like. This is what happens when you smoke. What's the normal color of your lungs? Pink. Here is the trachea up here in the larynx. This is the right lung. What color is it? Black. That's from 3 to 4 packs a day of cigarettes. But then you say, where's the other black lung on the left side? You see the rib markings? This patient had adenocarcinoma of the lung, which was peripheral. It got into the pleural cavity, and the entire left lung is encased with cancer. Then when you cut the lung open, you can see here's the primary tumor. There's that black lung. And it now invaded into the pleural cavity, is now encased the entire pleural cavity, and here's the diaphragm. It's invading into the diaphragm. And so this obviously has a very, 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 very poor prognosis. Once it gets to the pleural cavity, this is what it does to organs. It encases it. It uses the organ as a surface substrate to grow. So metastasis, it releases lytic enzymes to break down the blood vessel wall, gets to a vascular structure like lymphatics and veins. Can it get into arteries? Yes, but obviously a high-pressure system, you can exsanguinate. Where's a classic example of this? Is the heart. Since you looked at the heart and gross anatomy, what's the structure that sits posterior to the heart? Is the esophagus. It's posterior. What chamber of the heart sits on your esophagus? Is the left atrium. So if you had a esophageal cancer that invaded anteriorly at the level with the left atrium, it can erode and form a fistulous tract into the left atrium, and you can exsanguinate, or into the aorta. I've seen people die, because once it gets abnormal communication, invades to the aortic wall, then all that arterial blood dumps into the GI tract, and you exsanguinate. So knowing the anatomy of where these structures are become very important when you have disease processes. So this is what happens when you have colon cancer. 50% likes to go to where? To the liver. And here is a solitary lesion of colon cancer. And here you can see the colon cancer down here, these abnormal glands compressing the hepatocytes to the right. So this is metastatic colonic adenocarcinoma. Any questions about benign and malignant metastasis? Okay. Yes. When you say blood cancer, what are you referring to?
I guess where cancer would develop in the vessel.
There's very rare, the tumors that arise in blood vessels, the question is, are angiomas, benign tumors of endothelial cells, or when they're malignant, angiosarcomas. There are some lymphomas that arise in the intravascular space, but they're not very common. When you talk about tumors that arise of hematopoietic cells that occur in the bone marrow is called leukemia and spreads. Those that arise from the lymphoid tissue are called lymphomas, malignant lymphocytes. So depending upon where the cells are arising from and what the condition is.
In your lung example, I guess it's more about when it metastasizes?
Well, it invaded the pleural cavity and then encased the entire lung. That's different. And invaded into the pleural cavity and got access and started growing on the entire surface of the lung, like a substrate, like a petri dish. Any other questions? Grade and stage. Grade is what the pathologist will look at, whether it's well differentiated, and that becomes important to the clinician because well differentiated cancers tend to behave better as a general rule in terms of prognosis, where it looks like it resembled, but it has all those features that tells you it's malignant. So the higher the grade becomes poorly differentiated or anaplastic. So low grade is well differentiated. You can tell what the cells came from. High grade means that they're poorly differentiated. You can't tell where the cells came from. And it usually is biologically more aggressive and a poor prognosis. That's the whole idea of grade. You should know that definition. The stage is at the time of diagnosis based on structural confirmation, either from a biopsy, from a tissue, or fineal aspiration looking at individual cells. And the stage is based on a simple system called TNM. T for tumor, where the site of origin is and its size. N is lymph nodes, how it's traveled through the lymphatics to regional lymph nodes. And then M is for what, do you think? Metastasis. That's right. So it's basically T1, N2, M1. That's how they use this nomenclature. So it has primary tumor, it's got lymph node involvement, it's got metastasis. Or T1, N0, M0. Meaning what? You just have the primary tumor, it hasn't gone to the lymph nodes, and it has not metastasized. So which one has a better prognosis? Right, because it's not done what? Metastasized, gone to lymphatics, through the lymph nodes, or the metastasis. That's how the staging goes. And each tumor has a different staging nomenclature. If you see patients who have this staging in their charts, and you're trying to figure out heads or tails, that's what it refers to. Okay? And there are books on how to stage these tumors, and you're not expected in this course to know that, but just to give you an example how the staging works. Yes? Stage four would then, the other way they use the TNM to give you four stages basically. Stage one, two, three, and four. Four is metastasis.
So
that'd be.
One, two,
yes. Right. So if it was stage one, it would be just what? T1. And everything else, zero. And then what's two and three? In between. It's real simple. Okay? So here's an example of a well-differentiated squamous cell carcinoma. This is keratinization. You make keratin in squamous cells, and you see this what is called a keratin pearl. So the pathologist would say this is a poorly differentiated squamous cell carcinoma because I don't see what? A keratin pearl. It's not making keratinization. It could be the same thing as if I had an adenocarcinoma. I see well-differentiated glands, And then a poorly differentiated, I see individual cells, but no gland formation. So that would be poorly differentiated. You just have to know the definitions. I'm not going to show you photographs or anything like that. But that's how the pathologist becomes important. If, when you read a biopsy report in a patient, you're going to see these terms used. That's the important thing in interpreting how they got to this diagnosis. That's the whole. So which has a better prognosis? Well differentiated or poorly differentiated? Which one? Which has a poor prognosis? The word tells you right away. Correlates. Okay? But there are exceptions to this. The other thing you have to realize, tumor cells are genetically unstable. They go through Darwinian evolution at the cellular level. And they're going to become more malignant. They acquire new mutations for invasion and metastasis, by cell receptors, cytokines, autocrine stimulation of the self, all these things. So they get basically the phenotype, they get increased anaplasia or poorly differentiated. They have more cells that are dividing, gaining more mutations, and then lead to propensity to metastasize. So there are two factors. There's a natural selection that goes on that are able to live in low oxygen tension or acidic environments because you're going from aerobic to anaerobic metabolism. Then there's genetic instability, that malignant cells are acquiring more mutations as they evolve. Okay? Now, what are the complications of cancer? These are just a list, not to be memorized, okay? Just to show you. A mass effect. If you had a colonic cancer growing in your colon on the right side, it could cause obstruction because of the ileocecal valve of the small intestine. So that's one effect. When cancers invade into tissue and they run into nerves, what would the patient complain about? Pain. If you have leukemia, bone cancer, it goes to the periosteum, stretches, they have bone pain. If you have breast cancer invading into the chest wall or lung cancer invading the chest wall, they'll complain of chest pain. If you have cervical cancer invading into the pelvic floor, they'll have pelvic pain. So pain is a reflection of invasion. What's the most common tumor found in bone? Is metastasis. So if you had a tumor that's destroying bone, what happens to structural integrity? Decreases, so it can lead with a pathologic fracture. They can have bone that's metastatic and they sit up or they fall down, and all of a sudden they have a pathologic fracture with minor trauma. That's always a warning sign. Another thing is it can obstruct secretion. So for example, if you had a bladder cancer obstructing urinary flow, then you get ascending infection as a consequence. If you have a tumor in the lung that obstructs the airways, prevent mucociliary clearance, you can get pneumonias or post-obstructive abscesses. Because this is a chronic disease and you have macrophages releasing IL-1, it can cause the trapping of iron and you can't utilize it to make red blood cells. We call this anemia of chronic disease. So anemia means decreased red blood cell mass. So what happens to oxygenation? Decrease. And that's not good for the patient as a complication. Now they have fever. Remember, if tumor cells die, what cell is going to go in there and try to eat them? Macrophages. And what do they release? IL-1, IL-6, TNF that can stimulate now prostaglandins. You get fever. Jaundice. If you have pancreas, the head of the pancreas, a tumor, it obstructs the biliary flow, it backs up the bile in your liver, and you become yellow now. That's called obstructive jaundice. Or anytime you, for example, if you had esophageal cancer and it occluded your lumen, what would you not be able to do if you had esophageal cancer? Swallow. And then you have to worry about aspiration. And then another thing is cancer patients can present with cachexia, wasting. Why? Because the body's response to the tumor is such that macrophages can release TNF. An old name for TNF was called cachexin. And I wonder what it would do to your appetite. All this TNF is suppress your appetite. Remember when you get sick? What happens to your appetite? It goes down because TNF is being secreted. And so when you have chronic TNF secretion, this can lead to decreased appetite, leading to wasting, or cachexia is the clinical term for it. Okay? Tumor progression is a multi-step process. It involves genes that are important for controlling cell growth. What do we call these? Proto-oncogenes. And there's over 100 of these. Anything that's a growth factor, a receptor that binds to it on a cell that makes it grow, its transduction of signal through the cytoplasm is a proto-oncogene. Those that affect transcriptional activity, phosphorylation of protein kinases, these are all considered proto-oncogenes. Can hormones be considered proto-oncogenes? Yes, because estrogen, testosterone, they can be. Then we have what are called tumor suppressor genes. Because we want to balance our growth, we have to suppress growth. And how do we do it? By inducing what? Apoptosis. We decrease the length of the telomeres on your chromosome, so you have senescence. Or you cause, the third function is to prevent it from going into the cell cycle or growth arrest. So those are the three functions of a tumor suppressor gene, is to induce apoptosis of the mutated cells, to cause senescence. In other words, it can't divide anymore because they have decreased telomere length at the end of the chromosome. And the third is can't go into G1, so you're in growth arrest or G0. So those are the three main ways that tumor suppressor genes work through this process. And in general, there are multiple mutations that take place over a period of months to years or decades, depending upon the tumor that gives rise to it to become malignant. So this is just a diagram to illustrate all these proto-oncogenes and tumor suppressor genes. Here's a growth factor. This could be epidermal growth factor. Here's the epidermal growth receptor. And you can see each one of these can represent both tumor suppressor genes and proto-oncogenes. So it's a multi-step process. When you look at the morphologic changes, the biochemical changes are occurring, the mutations occurring without any obvious change to the epithelium. And then as a function of time, you go from an adenoma, for example, colon cancer, to carcinoma, and you have these multiple mutations. This is not to be memorized, just to remember, it's a multi-step process. To acquire enough genetic changes now become malignant over a period of time, in this case, years. So here's a normal karyotype of a male. So now, what does the karyotype of a malignant tumor cell look like? It looks like this. Is that reversible? Do you think you can genetically go back and look at the normal cell? What do you think? Yay or nay? No. So how do you get rid of cancer? You prevent it. That is the key, because there's no drug, no surgery, no radiation therapy. I don't care what they say out there, you cannot reverse that. That has 86 chromosomes. Your normal karyotype is what? 46. And then you create new chromosomes. See the little stubby little chromosome down here? They don't know what to do with it. You create new genetic material. So the key about neoplasia, when you see people smoking, I don't care what they're smoking. That's just one example. Sitting out in the sun too long. A lot of human cancers are what? The P word. Preventable. This is key. If you go, you play, you will pay genetically. And so this took many years through this process. So the diagnosis, as we finish this up, is a diagnosis based on taking a biopsy. Not by using x-ray, CT scan, or MRI, or tumor markers, but by biopsy. And so you want to evaluate for metastasis, invasion, and loss of cellular architecture when you do a biopsy or final aspiration. Cause of cancer. We talked about chemical carcinogens is a major. Two-thirds of all human cancers are due to chemical carcinogens, air pollution, water, food we eat, pickled vegetables, smoked meats, for example. Physical carcinogens, ionizing radiation, the most common human cancer, skin due to UV radiation. Tanning booths will give you not only wrinkles, but skin cancer. You pay for it, by the way. Then viruses. You think of hepatitis B for hepatocellular carcinoma, HPV for squamous cell carcinoma of the cervix, the vagina, anus, penis. You think of hepatitis C. You think of HHV8 for Kaposi sarcoma-associated herpes virus. And inflammation. This is another important thing, that if you have an inflammatory process in a tissue that's chronic, for example, if you had chronic osteomyelitis, because you're releasing all those growth factors, you're stimulating cells to divide. What happens when cells divide their mutation rate? And so what's the likelihood? You can get secondary cancer in chronic osteomyelitis. You get secondary osteogenic sarcoma of the bone in somebody who has chronic osteomyelitis for decades. Because what are you acquiring over a period of time? Mutations, protonuclear genes, tumor suppressor genes. And then there could be genetic diseases like familial polyposis coli, where you have a genetic propensity to have thousands of polyps, and the likelihood of getting colon cancer is 100%. So these are the causes, broad categories of causes, and so a lot of these we can prevent, can't we? That's the key. If you want to get rid of cancer, is to prevent it, the majority. If you're born with those mutations, then you have to minimize the other steps that are involved to acquire it. And so in summary, neoplasia is what? Genetic disease, because it involves mutations. Tumorigenesis is a multi-step process involving protonuclear genes and tumor suppressor genes. And how do you make the diagnosis of any neoplastic process? Biopsy or fine needle aspiration. And that is what will be covered on the midterm a week from today. This podcast was recorded by Dr. Henry Sanchez at the University of California, San Francisco.